You having fun just staring from across the room? You've got to strut your stuff, and I'll show you just what to do now. You gotta dance, gotta make your advance, you gotta show you've got the guts. I got a move that'll make them swoon, and it's called the two-step strut. Now dance with me.
Coming soon to a theater near you, it's The Equalizer, a weekly podcast where two idiots drop a cinema sibling in the lap of a perfectly content solo film. My name is Mike Nolan, and I am joined, as always, by the sequel to my prequel, Madison Jones. Madison Jones, are you in good form?
Yes.
Good. I got nothing for this opening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to try to do some kind of Mr. Megorium bullshit, but then I would have to engage with its brand of, like, joyless whimsy.
Yeah. I think that's, like... I don't know how to describe this movie. I've seen it before. I hadn't seen it in like a number of years. It was way older than I thought it was. I didn't realize it was like a movie from 2007. I thought it was like more like a 2014 movie. But yeah. And also I'm just like, man, Dustin Hoffman looks old in this movie. And he is still alive. Like, I'm just like very surprised that he's like... I don't know, like...
They probably aged him up a little bit. I mean, like, makeup maybe. And stuff. Like, I don't think he was that old when he did the movie. He just probably was made to look older.
That's probably true.
For whimsy purposes.
I did like his getup, though. I liked the eyebrows and the hair, and which apparently were his idea. That was all his idea. As well as how he's like, spoke and stuff. Like, it was all his sort of, like... when he heard about the character, he worked with the director to, like, develop, like, his mannerisms and stuff about being, like, sort of like a old toy maker Santa Claus elf on Ritalin. but, yeah, this movie, I thought I was going to go back to it because I'd seen it a number of times before. Not my favorite movie by any means. But, like, I thought I was going to discover something new about it. Mm-hmm. Not really. It's pretty average overall. It's nice. It's a good feels movie, for sure.
It, one, was wild to me because it felt like the writer, Zach Helm, had a technical grasp on whimsy, but didn't actually, like, wasn't good at writing it. There's a lot of things in here that I was like, I mean, technically that's whimsical, but there's not really, like, a lot of actual life behind it. Speaking of Zach Helm, I'm trying to find the picture here. At the very beginning, it says supposedly directed by Zach Helm, which is very funny to me. And two, I looked up his writing credits on IMDb. There's four writing credits for Zach Helm. The first is, there's something that the movie he wrote before this was Stranger Than Fiction. Like, he wrote Stranger Fiction before this. There's a movie called Good Canary. And then the next credit from 2022, Deep Water, the Ben Affleck, Ana de Armas. Like, social thriller was written by this man. So the guy who wrote Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium wrote Stranger Than Fiction and Deep Water.
What a breath of a career, writing-wise. Yeah, I get what you mean by, like, the sort of, like, I don't know, Matt Whimsy, I call it.
That's a good call, yeah.
Like, they didn't have a lot of good dialogue, but it's just, like, most of the movie is just, like, them in the store and weird shit's happening in the store. Like, and it does have a plot. I don't want to say it does not, but, like...
No, I'm not saying it does have a plot.
But, like, the actual, like, whimsiness is, like, the store itself and not... In the characters sort of whimsy kind of falls flat and is pretty generic. Like, it's like Natalie Portman's character is like, yep, that's how it is here. It's a magic store.
It's like there's a hierarchy of whimsy. So, like, as long as whoever's speaking to Jason Bateman's character, who they just call Mutant and he never corrects them, whoever's speaking to Mutant is the most whimsical person in the scene. If the kid is talking to Natalie Portman, she's the most whimsical person in the scene. And if she's talking to Mr. Megorium, he's the most... Like, it's not the dummy stick, which people say, who's the person in the scene who has to have it explained to them? It's legitimately just, who is the least whimsical person in the scene, and they're the straight man.
Yeah, that's a very good observation there. Yeah, it's like a nesting doll situation of just, like, who's the bigger whimsy?
There were a few lines of, like, the Mr. Megorium fundamentally or purposefully misunderstanding, like, a sentence. Like, someone will be like,
according to your employment records, you've had several fictional characters on the books.
Like whom?
The king of planet Yahweh.
Oh, he's not fictional.
Sir, there are people down...
He's not really the king, and the planet Yahweh doesn't exist, but he's not fictional.
Well, that's the thing. If there's no planet...
Mr. Weston, yes, you can't blame people for having aspirations.
They'll say a phrase, and then he will interpret it in a technically correct way, but not the way they meant. And that's mostly his dialogue. I did like, and I'm 100% putting in the quote here, Mike, in the future, you're going to put this in right now.
Your life is an occasion. Rise to it.
I actually think that was legitimately a very good line. Like, yes. I will give the movie credit for that line. It was very good.
I think, like, all the points where he gets real with Molly. You're right. Mahoney. You like Molly? Mahoney? Molly Mahoney. Yeah, who is totally a... this exists in the Marvel verse because that's a very good Marvel verse name. Yeah.
My favorite thing about that is I'm diverging. I apologize for interrupting, but my favorite thing about that being the Marvel standard is because Stan Lee was quote unquote writing so many books at once in the 70s. Mm-hmm. He named them alliteratively so he could remember who they were. Like Peter Parker was like, oh, that's Spider-Man, PP, Peter Parker, whatever. Like, he didn't give them names that had different because he was just like, I have to keep track of like 30 people. I'm just going to name everybody this way so I can.
Yeah, I love it.
Sorry, we were talking about Mahoney.
Oh, yeah. Any of the moments where he gets kind of like a little bit more real with her are pretty good. Like, I think, like, I do think I got a little bit of goosebumps, like, in his sort of, like, last moment of, like, talking about, Henry the Eighth or whatever, like the Shakespeare, and it just is like, oh yeah, like the Shakespeare was a genius and just outlined this long,
When King Lear dies in Act Five, do you know what Shakespeare has written? He's written, he dies. That's all, nothing more. No fanfare, no metaphor, no brilliant final words. The culmination of the most influential work of dramatic literature is, he dies. It takes Shakespeare a genius to come up with, he dies. And yet every time I read those two words, I find myself overwhelmed with dysphoria. And I know it's only natural to be sad, but not because of the words he dies, but because of the life we saw prior to the words. I've lived all five of my ex Mahoney. And I am not asking you to be happy that I must go. I'm only asking that you turn the page, continue reading, and let the next story begin. And if anyone ever asks what became of me, you relate my life in all its wonder and end it with a simple and modest, he died.
I just think that's, like, pretty beautiful. Like, I don't know, like, it's just, it's like, I don't know, like, because every other part of this movie, and I just thought of this, you know, in the Harry Potter movies, like, in the first few, where you see, like, glimpses of Dumbledore, and he's like, I'm a weird old man. Like, yeah. I'm a weird old, a magical wizard man to be looked up to. Every moment is... with him outside of those moments is exactly like that, except it's like for an hour and a half. Like, and to be fair, like, that stuff is good in like little doses, but when it's an hour and a half, it's just like, this guy's kind of annoying.
That's his character. Like, he doesn't have a deeper character other than just like, hoo-hoo, look at me. The king of the planet Yahweh isn't fictional. He's not a king, and the planet Yahweh doesn't exist, but he's not fictional. Hoo-hoo.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah,
like, that is the extent of his character, unless he's like, I'm going to die now. And like, that's it. Like, that's not a character. That's just like a couple different tropes slapped on top of each other. And I don't know. It's fine. For kids, maybe it's fine. A lot of Letterboxd people who watch this as kids like love this movie. I could see how that would be a thing. If I wasn't 30 years old and I didn't already have like established like wordplay, like turnaround of wordplay, etc., that I like, I would have been like, dude, this guy's a genius. Holy shit. Like, I would have loved this, but it's just, there's not a lot.
People I felt bad for in this movie.
Yes.
The doctor.
In alphabetical order, please.
I think it is the doctor. Okay. Actually, no, it's not. The bed store operator.
Yes.
Okay. The doctor. And the little kid's mom who came home and just found Jason Bateman doing like playing pretend in her son's room, like in a jester's hat where the son is the king. Like it's
so funny.
It's pretty funny. And I think that was the most unhinged Jason Bateman scene I've ever seen, I think, because he usually is like,
You need to watch Thunder Force then.
Okay.
It's the Melissa McCarthy Viola Davis movie. It's on Netflix. There's a bit in there that gets pretty weird.
Okay. Yeah, but like when he was doing the jester, like I don't know, that was pretty funny. Like I don't know, like he just like got really like, I don't know, like the whole thing was like the juxtaposition between the scene right in front before it and then the scene right after it where he's just like, no, I shouldn't be playing. I don't want to wear a hat. And then he's like, my king, the dragon is eating the villagers. Like sort of that. I don't know. It was pretty good. I liked it.
Yeah, it was fine. I was mostly just like, why is he here? This is such a bad idea. Like I know what's going to happen. His mom's going to come home and find a 40-year-old man alone with her son in his bedroom.
Yeah. Not great. Not great.
One, there's two things before I think before I'm ready to move on. One, you missed somebody off your list, and that person is directly behind you.
Oh, yeah. That kind of scared me for a moment, Mike. I'm just like, what are you talking about?
For the audience, Madison's Zoom background is of the stuffed animal wall from Mr. McGorim's Wonder Emporium. There's a sock monkey from that wall who every time literally anybody is near him, his arms just reach out for a hug and they always walk away without having seen him and he just looks very sad.
He looks very sad. It's a very sad moment. And like in this moment that this shot is taken from in particular, mm-hmm. they like stay on the monkey for a long time. Mm-hmm. They like look at the despair in the monkey's eyes.
The other thing is I was legitimately for a while this movie not sure where it was going, only because there were two movies here. One where Natalie Portman ends up inheriting the store and becomes magical, or two where she like not learns to move on, but figures out, because her kind of whole character thing is she feels stuck. Like, mm-hmm. I was like this great musical kind of prodigy, and now I work here and I can't like make music. Like my brain just won't like finish this song or whatever. And the idea is either she takes over or she clears that blocks him out, and Jason Bateman learns to find his inner child and he takes over the store.
Oh, that's pretty good. I like that one a little bit more.
I wasn't sure which one it was going to be. And so I was kind of legitimately throughout the whole thing, I was like, it could equally, at every point of this, it could equally be either one of these. I think until she gets him out of the hospital and they go on their like great quote unquote last day, that's when I was like, okay, she's going to take over the store. Like that's where they kind of brought it in for a landing for me. But for a while, I was like, this is kind of interesting. It could legitimately be either one of these.
Yeah. It's, I think like maybe the Jason Bateman thing would be more believable if it wasn't just like, oh, a switch I'll put on one day. Just like, okay, yeah, I'm going to embrace the store. Right. There you know,
it was a thing where normally I would have just like disregarded that as the movie went on and he wasn't like becoming more whimsical, but also it was this movie in which nobody's characters were really moving the needle in any direction very much. Mm-hmm. So I could also see how they were just going to maybe rush it at the end. Like you said, normally I would have like been expecting more growth, but I was watching Mr. McGorium's Wonder Emporium. I wasn't really expecting a good escalation. I was expecting a sudden one, but
sure.
Anyway. Do you have anything else you want to talk about this movie, or should we move on?
I don't think so. I think like it was a movie. It was a movie. Had some good moments, had some dull moments. Mm-hmm. It exists, and I think it's just like a little like too young for me. I think even for our like we've watched like cartoons and like and stuff like it, sure. it's like tone is a little too young, I think.
Yeah,
like,
I mean this was squarely set at being whimsical and like really like sharp like jokes and dialogue for kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think this is like one of those like the kids really want to go to the movies or something. Mm-hmm. So the parents can take them to this movie and it be like fine for the parents, enjoyable for the children.
Yeah.
Know, like not everybody's having a great time, but like it's not intolerable. Like watching like, fucking the pup, the Paw Patrol, arrest,
everyone.
And
well, I know what our Paw Patrol sequel is going to be. Yeah, this is a movie where wasps can take their children and not be afraid someone's going to start talking about periods.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I was on this movie, and it sounds like you still have maybe a positive take on the movie.
Yeah.
Generally speaking. May surprise you to learn other people had opinions. That's right. We're back with Letterboxd here. I have a review from Owen Larkin, who has a pro rating. Gave this just a heart. They didn't star it. They just liked it. Absolutely deranged, this directorial debut opens with a title card that says, supposedly a film by Zach Helm, and then he never made a movie ever again. End of review. This is the only directorial outing for Zach Helm. He wrote some other movies, but this is the only movie he ever directed.
Oh, interesting. You briefly mentioned it before, but now that it's been getting brought up again, this goes in like A+ on a long opening credit sequence. Like, you know, mm-hmm. Madison Jones loves a long opening credit sequence. Bring it back, Hollywood.
I just needed a spooky lady giving us like half a book's worth of exposition, sort of fading away, going, oh, hold on a minute, I forgot something, coming back and giving us another half a book explanation.
I have a theory. Okay. I blame Inception.
Interesting.
I think that movie like was the first, like, you know, because you know the whole joke about like that the song or the lack mm-hmm. of song. It's the bromp, and then like the movie starts.
Transformers, like, surely was a few years before. I mean, if the whole as like an aesthetic instead of like music is what bothers you, Transformers was like a few years before that.
Okay.
I take your meaning. Like, I'm sorry, I wasn't trying
I'm just saying, when you're opening a movie, romance me a little bit. Like, mm-hmm. have a little foreplay, and then before we start like sticking our movie tongues into each other.
If you want Madison to enjoy the movie, you got to give them a little funnilingus.
Exactly.
Our next review comes from Alfie Packham, who gave this 2 stars. Roald Dahl dipped in cheese. End of review.
It does have a Roald Dahl energy, I think. Or, like, I think that's pretty good. I don't know what the cheese part is.
Oh, like cheesiness. Like, it's cheesy.
Like, cheesy. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'd say this has Roald Dahl-ness. It is a London. It is a, like, this was filmed in London, apparently.
I did describe this movie, the aesthetic to Jackson, as if Wes Anderson made Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Yes. Yes.
Our next review comes from Blake, who gave us 2 stars. I say this without meaning to be edgy, but the movie gets so much better when he dies. This thing drowns in Hoffman doing a simple Jack voice and going, woohoo, in every line of dialogue.
Oh my gosh.
I hate Megorium, and I hope he's in hell. End of review.
Maybe that's a good idea for a sequel. Maybe he thought he was going to heaven, but he's going to hell.
I should have bought more shoes.
Done.
Mandy gave this 1.5 star.
Our movie's going to be Megorium in hell, and the devil just can't make him suffer. He just is impossible. He's impossible to suffer.
There's a thing. Oh. We may dig into that. There's a thing I did like legitimately in this movie, and it was the way everybody responded to Jason Bateman with a technically correct answer that he could not like come back from. Mm-hmm. Like, it was every time he'd say something, all of their responses were correct. Not really the answer he was looking for, but also there's legitimately no way he could contradict them. So he just had to stand there quietly for a minute until they walked away.
Jason Bateman's really good at doing the, like, okay, this conversation is going nowhere. I'm not going to talk to you anymore kind of thing.
Our last review comes from Mandy, who gave this 1.5 star. Watch this while packed into an unair-conditioned auditorium with 307th graders all making fart noises. End of review.
I know that feeling. I mean, like, I worked at Blue Man Group for 7 years. So that was like every summer is the kids go to Giordano's, get full up on pizza, and then pizza fart all over the auditorium and just like all over the Blue Man. And
while they get up on the stage and fart on the Blue Man.
I mean, just because of the radius, you know, like, you know, they fart over everything.
Sure. Gotcha.
The amount of times that it happened, probably every maybe fifth group. This is me getting into something. Mm-hmm. Okay. So about every fifth group, student group and Blue Man Group, during the summertime, they go to Giordano's, and there's always that one kid. That one kid is like, and on the field trip is like, I'm gonna eat as much pizza as I can.
Of course.
And then they come to Blue Man Group, And then that kid gets fucking sick in the fucking auditorium because their fucking chaperone was like, hey, Dylan, don't do that. You're going to get sick.
Spewman group.
More like Spewman group. Yeah.
That was the last of the reviews. So I cede the next 25 minutes to the carnival as is. It's right.
What's that? What's that?
I can hear it.
Guten Tag.
Guten. Oh, what? Oh, wait. No, you're Bonjour Madison, aren't you?
I'm Bonjour Madison.
Okay, yeah, that tracks. For a second, I thought somehow with only one, legendary nipple taken off, we'd somehow gotten rid of the Inverse Wizard. But then I remembered.
We don't have to recount the Inverse Wizard lore. If you want that, listen to the last episode.
No, it's fine. I was surprised that just that you said Guten Tag. I thought you were Guten Tag Madison, but I forgot that that French is the inverse of German, as we've established.
Yeah, I don't want it today.
Okay.
I don't want to.
It was good visiting the carnival. I guess we're on to our pitch.
Hold on. Wait. We can't. This is Madison.
Oh, sure. Uh-huh.
This is regular Madison.
Are you a carnival? I mean to ask, do you like own the carnival or are you a worker there? And
I've actually never been there. I've never been there.
But it's staffed by clones of you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it creeps me out.
I want to spend the next like couple minutes of lore time explaining how your clones work at the circus if you've never been here.
Well, Dargulax abducted me a long time ago.
Jesus.
Took some of my butt juice and cloned me from all the butt juice.
As everyone knows, butt juice is stored in the balls.
Yeah, butt juice is stored in the balls.
I hate when this. You know how you always say, you know, 4 years ago when we were doing Hook 2, did you think we'd be here talking about? I would not. This is what disturbs me, not the movies we come up with. This shit is what bothers me.
Yeah. And yeah, so that's how they cloned me. I assume they have some sort of. I think Cargamel has some sort of forbidden technology, her horror technology.
Sure.
And because. My butt DNA is imperfect. That's why they're all variations and they're not exact clones.
Hey, Madison, don't talk about your butt like that.
Hey, I mean, my butt's fat with a pH. Anyway, so yeah, there's your little lore dump for this episode.
Good choice of words. We're talking about butts.
Exactly. I feel bad for you, Mike. We have to play a game still. We have to play a game.
I haven't found the five tomes, so I can't get out of the Quibi curse.
Me, regular Madison, brought a game for today, but it's not part of the carnival.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So does that mean it's not under the curse of the Inverse Wizard?
Yes. Yeah. This is just a regular old Madison game. Something that I found is apparently like when this movie came out, it became a little bit of a meme thing or there was like a meme thing of like, so it's called Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium, and people were like, Mr. Bobbles, Destroyable Wobbles, you know, like stuff like that.
Sure.
Yeah. So what I have is a surname generator and an adjective generator. Okay. So we got to come up with the place.
Like the title. Yeah.
The title. Yeah. And then maybe we could talk about what that place does.
All right. Hit me with the first one.
I think this comes from all around the world, or like they're because this one's called Bisex.
Bisex. That's the last name, or the.
It's either Bisex, maybe Bisex, or Bisay, because it's B I S S E X, and the adjective we have is excited. So,
Mrs. Bisay's excited bidets.
Yes. Okay. So, what's so excitable about Mrs. Bisay's bidets?
They put just a little kernel of electricity in the water. Just a
ooh, oh my gosh,
ooh, put a little pep in your tinge, step.
Okay, yeah. Okay, very good. All right,
this one's next for you. One. You do this one.
So I'll say Dr. O'Connell's squealing
McDonald's.
Yes. So it is a. Specifically a McDonald's. It's specifically a McDonald's that serves only pork products, and they do all the killing of the pigs And it's a live farm McDonald's, and they make everything in house.
I was gonna say there's just pigs roaming the actual like restaurant side of the store, like where you sit.
Oh my gosh!
So they serve only pork products, and you actually have to like look in the eyes of a pig while you're eating bacon or whatever. Like,
oh, that's pretty good. Yeah. Okay.
That's more haunting. That's maybe equally as haunting as what you said.
Maybe equal. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So it's your surname is Juvenal.
Juvenal.
And your adjective is unwritten.
Unwritten. I have one. I'm just trying to find the right, like, I know the rhyme word. I'm trying to find the right kind of like attack on the beginning of it.
Colonel.
Oh, God. So, like, Mr. Juvenal's unwritten, like, pool hall. But I don't know if I want pool hall. I don't want hall. Workshop some other words that can go before hall with me. Pool hall, dance hall. Oh, Mr. Juvenal's unwritten strip mall.
Okay. What happens there?
No contracts have been signed, so no one actually legally can take it. Like, they just all agree that the store is there, but anybody else can just show up and start also selling their wares from any of the stores.
There's also no written words on anything in the mall.
No.
Like, no store signs. No, like, it's just stuff is on racks, and no prices on there.
Mm-hmm. You have to ask to buy it. You have to be like, well, how much does this cost? How much does it? There's also no rules. Yes. The food court is fucking wild.
Oh my God. People just taking handfuls of mac and cheese and throwing it on their plate.
Yeah. Let's do one more. You do one more, and then I think we maybe move on.
Okay. So my surname is Hugo. All right. And my word is omniscient. Professor Hugo's omniscient Fuego Takis.
Is Takis in parentheses at the end?
Yeah, Takis is at the is a parentheses. And Professor Hugo's omniscient Fuego's Takis. Professor Hugo's omniscient Fuego's. It's Professor Hugo's omniscient egos.
Okay.
So Professor Hugo was working for a waffle company.
Uh-huh. That will remain unnamed.
A certain waffle company that we will not talk about. And accidentally spilled some like brain goop in it, and in his waffle iron. It's a real Powerpuff Girl situation.
I was about to say the new Powerpuff CW reboot sounds wild.
Sounds so fucking wild. This plate of waffles becomes omniscient and narrates other people's lives as they sit on a plate. And it's it's more of like a slice of life, sort of like small story, sort of anthology thing. Where like you get these little stories of slice of lives, based off of like this plate of waffles being in the room with it.
This is a trademark Equalizer's original idea, but a movie that is like, think like The French Dispatch by Wes Anderson's new film, where it's anthology, but it's all about the lives of these people in this one restaurant. And then it turns out the narrator has been the waffle on the plate of the first guy.
Yeah.
That's trademark Equalizer's idea.
Yeah, yeah.
But speaking of Equalizer's ideas that we can't trademark.
Yeah.
It may be time that we move into the pitch.
A rating on one to ten on that game.
I really enjoyed this game. I don't know how you're going to find a way to bring it back into other movies, but I would play it. Yeah. That's very fun. All right, let's move to the pitch. Do you have any ideas for this? Because I have one idea and then a list of rhyming titles.
I may have been half listening, but like there was this whole plot point that Mr. Megorium had a little bit of like beef or business with Thomas Edison and the light bulb. So if you think about like the sort of like opposites of these two like inventors' trajectories is where Edison's thing became a very practical, like very like useful thing, you know, eventually, and Megorium's became very like magical, right? Like, I don't know, like I'm thinking of like maybe there's something there where like Edison's great granddaughter or grandchild is coming back and trying to take claim to the Megorium line because of some weird deal.
Gotcha.
Or something like that. That was the only thing that I really had besides there's a rival store, toy store that it also uses magic, but it's big business magic or something.
Mm-hmm. I have one idea. I'll get to that at the end of this because mostly I just had a lot of fun the other night coming up with rhyming names like Mr. Megorium's confusing cafetorium. Or, the blanket idea is Mahoney's in charge of the Emporium now, and it's like, oh yeah, every year this thing has to be done or this room has to be cleaned, but I didn't know that because Mr. Megorium always handled it and it hasn't been cleaned and now it's an uh-oh problem or something like that. I don't have specific ideas for each. It was sort of a blanket. This was a thing that nobody knew needed to be done because Mr. Megorium just did it. And now that he hasn't and they didn't know they had to, it's become an issue. Mr. Megorium's sanitation sanatorium.
Yeah.
Or Mr. Megorium's occult crematorium.
My God.
Or...
I was thinking in my mind as I was watching it, because I did know while I was watching it that she takes over the store at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking of Miss Mahoney's unsanctioned baloney, something like that, or trying to rhyme Mahoney with something.
A huge competitor of Peter's Leaders of Historically Spicy Chili.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Mr. Megorium's Astronomical Auditorium. Ooh. Or Mr. Megorium's Mystical Moratorium. And, having saved the best for last, Mr. Megorium's Basement of Borium.
Oh my gosh. Where they they discover a, okay, so that gave me an idea. Go ahead.
Well, I have one actual idea I want to throw. Let me put this on the table just in case maybe it plays well with what you're interested in there. My actual idea was after they went, the first time we saw the dial for the room of doors and just Mr. Megorium's weird actual room, Mr. Megorium's wonder escape room.
This is sort of what I'm a big comparison to this movie, even though I don't think it's a one-to-one doll, is to Willy Wonka, right? Mm-hmm. And if you think about the Willy Wonka movies and where the books went after that, next, I think the next one is the glass elevator, right?
They went to space.
And they're yeah, they're trapped in an elevator or whatever, in the glass elevator at one point. And I'm what if there's a room in the Emporium that they discover that they can't get out of because it is boring or there's no magic in it or something? Or I don't know. This is a weird, not in line with the movie, but it's just the store is a person. Every person has a little darkness in them or something like that. Or has something that they hide away or something. Or if we want to go with the a Dumbledore thing of you discover a secret of Mr. Megorium later on after he's gone.
Mr. Megorium collaborated with the Nazis.
Yeah. God. But something like that, right? Exactly. But
I feel maybe we should, no matter what we do, we should keep the vibe of, not kid friendly, but the idea, I think it's just, I get what you mean. And if we were going to make the Riverdale version of Mr. Megorium's, absolutely, he's got some dark shit in his past. I feel in this case, maybe we just let that dog lie and we keep it pretty cheerful.
So So going on the escape room sort of thing, are you familiar with the concept of moon logic?
Go ahead. And I don't. It sounds familiar, but I don't know.
I don't know what the origin of it is, but the idea of moon logic became very prevalent in the Escape from Monkey Island games, the point and click adventure sort of games. And the whole idea of moon logic is that it is, you do something to something and something implausible happens, but it solves your problem sort of thing. It's I think in one of the Escape from Monkey Island games, there is literally a you have to get the shampoo and then you put the shampoo on the banana and then the banana gets really slippery or something like that. And then someone slips on it and then falls and then they call their wife and then their wife sends them money to buy new shoes or something like that. Or, you know, stuff like, you know, just the actual A to B doesn't make a lot of sense, basically.
Yeah. That's right.
So an escape room or something like that within the Emporium with a lot of moon logic ideas, like, mm-hmm. might be fun to do. Like, and like, it could be like pretty, I don't know how we make it interesting where we come up, because we're like coming up with bullshit, right? But like, I think that could be fun and would be in the vibe of the tone of the Magoria magic, right? Mm-hmm.
So let me go ahead, because it sounds like maybe this is what we're gravitating towards. I know you threw out the idea earlier about Mr. Magorium's in hell and the devil cannot punish him, which, while I know what I just said, that does also sound weirdly like it could be in the vibe of this movie.
That's also happening, but it's not in this movie.
That's in the Snyder Cut that we're not pitching.
Yeah, exactly. That's in the DVD bonus extra of this movie. God. Or the side-scrolling marketing campaign on the website for this movie.
Our 30 minutes. I almost said our 30 seconds. Our 30 minutes. So let's start with this. Is it a thing where they find out he built this and they go on purpose, or is it a suddenly like, we've accidentally activated, like, he was building this for the store and then he decided it was his time to go and he never finished it and we accidentally stumbled into it? Like, what's the,
you know what I kind of want to do? Mm-hmm. And, because the magic, if we're really fitting the tone, because the magic is Mahoney's now, I think it should be a plot point centered around her and the store.
Sure. Yes.
What if it's like, she's sort of met with an impossible situation, or some sort of like hard decision, and mm-hmm. she feels trapped, and
the store changes.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. That's really good. So in that case, it needs to be. So then, what if she's taken over and she like doesn't leave the store, like she's just working, like the idea of, I mean, because now I guess she technically owns the house in the door of rooms or whatever, and so I'm trying to think of a way of essentially the store is making her have to leave, like even if you just like go outside and get a coffee, leave.
Sure.
Not like you have to quit or whatever, but like, is that an angle? Because the idea of an escape room is you're trying to get out.
Yeah,
I don't know, that's one idea.
Well, we could do like where it forces her out, but then it like traps like the kid and Jason Bateman in, or like some other characters.
At that point, though, she doesn't really learn a lesson. My thought is that they present her a problem in which she has to get out. Like her goal is to get out of the store.
Yeah.
But I don't know. As I'm talking about it, that sounds really kind of flimsy, because like. I don't know.
I think there's something there. I think we just have to kind of like maybe hone it a little bit more.
Mahone it.
So did they hint at her and Jason Bateman having a relationship?
No.
They just seem like friends.
I think it's like in the way that to steal a quote from Community, it's two conventionally attractive people of opposite sexes like kind of pressed up against each other. Of course, people are going to just naturally be like, oh, but there's a love interest. I didn't, because I was pretty sure he's at least 20 years older than her, and I was like, that,
sure,
I hope we don't go there.
Yeah, I don't, I didn't really get that vibe either, so mm-hmm. like, the only reason why I ask is because maybe there's something like, where she is not a mythical toy wizard, maybe she's a human, right? And she has this job and she like loves running the store, but like maybe like it's keeping her from doing anything else, like exploring like a love life or something, or like and this, she's keeping herself in the store because it's her like hideaway from having another like aspect of life beyond that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then the store, because the store cares about her and the store is a living being, does this whole elaborate escape room thing to teach her the lesson of, we could also have like a sort of like with the other characters, there like mm-hmm. be a whole escape thing too, like, right? Like, because to me, the store can essentially run itself. It seems like it is alive and ages, right? You know, like, so maybe there's something like an escape plot we can do with the kid and also with Jason Bateman's character, or like with the writer guy who lives in the basement.
Bellini. I forgot about Bellini. Let me throw another idea at you.
Okay.
That is just a little bit darker, but maybe still keeping in the tone of the movie. We set it in the future, and the kid has grown old and died. And maybe Jason Bateman's old, like, has died as well, but she hasn't, because she's finding out, like, she's, this is where she's kind of finding out that she's now not aging like he did. And she, like, hasn't left the store in 20 years, or isn't, like, she's running the store and it's fine, but won't, like, open up to people, or doesn't go out into the world and take part in it anymore. And that's why the toy store forms itself into an escape room of, like, and maybe it traps, like, some other characters in, and that's how she, like, learns to care about them, or meet, like, actually, like, that kind of an idea of, like, makes her work with some characters to care again and, like, open her heart to the world. So kind of like what you were talking about, like, she's closed off a part of herself to the world, but maybe it's because it's, like, the first time she's, like, lost people that she cared about, just because of the fact that she grows old and they grow old and she doesn't, ostensibly.
Yeah.
Or, like, at a much slower rate.
Okay. That's pretty good. Like, we could open with, like, maybe, like, a time lapse of, like, her running the store throughout, like, many years. And,
let's,
like,
let's fucking give, like, up a run for its money here.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. Maybe you see, like, a good, like, first few years of, like, sort of, like, bliss, and, you know, and, like, you sort of see, like, Jason Bateman graying, and then, like, the kid growing up, but her kind of staying the same, and, like, it's keeping her, like, somewhat youthful, right? And I think she kind of realizes it, and then you see, like, the kid going off to college, and Jason Bateman, like, maybe, like, taking a tumble or something, like breaking a hip or something, and then, like, you, like, really, oh, like, he's old, but, like, she's still young, and then, like, so he can't work at the store anymore, and then, like, I don't know, like,
kid gets, like, married, we see him have a family, like, that kid grows up,
brings, like, his kids in, you know, like,
I think one of the main, not, like, antagonists, but I think one of the main characters, let me start there, of this movie is going to be the grandson of the kid.
Sure.
Who's, like, who we see in the montage, like, has a falling out with Natalie Portman because, like, in her, like, grief and whatever, she didn't, like, come to the funeral or something. Like, she talks to someone, and he's like, there's, like, a shouting match. We don't necessarily know what it's about because it's a montage. And the idea is, like, yeah, my dad told me I'm not allowed to come here because, like, you're selfish and only care about the store, whatever. Like, a way of, so then we can also have a character who's, like, the voice in the back of Natalie Portman's head. Like, the dad of the grandson is saying all the things that she's thinking. So it's, like, driving, like, negative reinforcement. And so that's why she's like, yeah, he's right. You shouldn't come in here or whatever. Like, which is wild if the toy store is still operating correctly. Like, she's becoming this bit kind of sad old woman.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, like, she continues to, like, maybe it's sort of, like, she's hiding a thing, or, like, she's hiding her feelings a bit, like, with it, and she's just, like, oh, I gotta be happy all the time, and just, like,
that's a good point.
You know, it's just, like, I gotta be happy, and that's what Mr. Megorium did, you know, like, even through, like, the darkest times, you know, like, whimsy was, like, the drug, but, like, maybe the store, like, sends her on the escape room journey, and at the end she discovers, like, maybe something from Megorium's past, like, some things that he hid, like, and just, like, oh, yeah, it's just, like, oh, he did have sad times, and everything, but he didn't show them either, and, like, maybe that's the lesson she could learn. It's, like, oh, don't hide that, things, like, go out and, like,
I think you're absolutely right, and I think that perfectly transitions us into starting to work on what the escape room is.
Yeah.
Because a lot of escape rooms involve, like, looking into, like, paintings and clues. In this case, I'm thinking books, as if, what if by chance, there happened to be an exhaustive biography of Mr. Megorium in the basement of the toy store that could hold some clues to the escape room and her emotional journey.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen the movie, that's an actual thing in the store. There's a basement full of his biographies.
Yes. That the one guy writes.
Who was born and raised in the basement.
Yes.
Bellini in this movie and still, or is it like his like grandson as well? Like Bellini had a family and his grandson is still living in the basement and doing this.
Bellini had a first name.
I can't believe you made the joke about Bellini and not the person whose name rhymes with baloney.
Whatever. I don't know if he's in it because to me it read that he... I don't know. It read to me that he was also eternal. He is the journal maker. He's the one writing the story, which is a wild thing. Like, which is a whole aspect of that conversation, like that movie that they just don't explain too much. Is like this guy is like a writer of tales.
I'm going to actually insist Bellini is in it because in the scene where they get to the basement and they have to start like coming, they're like, Bellini, we have like 20 minutes. We got to find this. And he's like, nope, break. They're like, what are you talking about, break? He's like, in contract, I have break. And it's like, he will not help them. So he's just sitting there like eating a sandwich while they're like hurriedly going through these books. Like he'd know exactly where to find it, but he's on his like OSHA mandated break, not OSHA, whatever, union mandated break. Like it's in my contract. I get a break. Yeah. And so he will not help them, which I think is just very funny.
Yeah. I like that. A part of the, an escape room thing we could do is, that is very, sort of Moon Logic, but also sort of escape roomy is, they're looking through the books and they realize like some of the pages have holes in them, like blocked holes in them. Maybe there's a clue that they like, oh, we know it's something on this page, but we don't know what it is or something. If they interlay the books, the book pages on top of each other, like facing outward over this page, the blocks will like spell out something, you know, like, and will like the code to get into the next part of the room or something like that. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like they have to overlay the pages exactly correct on another thing so that the holes in the pages match over like a letter.
The pages are laying on top of each other too, so it is like spelling something out. Like if they order the pages in the right order of what their page numbers are, right? Like it's just like, oh, it's 32 in this book, then like 43, and then you know, like that's like, I don't know what the answer to that is, you know, or what we don't have to come up with the answer, but like the code could be something, right?
We have about 17 minutes. I think what we almost counterintuitively, let's stop for a second and decide how many rooms we want
to
do.
Most escape rooms have 2 to 3.
I would have said about 3 just for rule of 3. And the second question is, how do we want to theme them? Is it like one room for Mr. Megorium, one room for the kid, one room for mutant? Like, do we want to do that? Or is there like a different idea that you weren't thinking for theming them? Because I feel like if we know what the themes of the rooms are, that might lend itself to more easily coming up with escape room stuff. Like if we do the kid, there's obviously a lot of hats in his room or whatever. Like I said, and that could also give us a vibe because mutants might be about like accounting and banking.
Yeah. But are we still doing it in the future where they're old and not in the movie anymore?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like... But I mean, if the idea is she's learning to deal with her grief over the death of these two people who she had a connection with, and it's like the first time she's lost those people, it might make sense to theme the rooms after them and Mr. Megorium. As a means of like coming to terms with that is more what I'm thinking by throwing that out there.
That works. I think there's one with Megorium. I think that's his. And you know what the first page that they put those pages on is the airplane, the paper airplane.
Yes, the airplane that he made. That's very good, actually.
Yeah.
It's very good.
Yeah. So I think that's the Megorium room, right? You know.
I like that. That means the actual toy store floor is the Megorium room. Like, I think that at some point they find those pages, but maybe they don't know what to do with them yet, so they bring them along. But I feel like the actual Megorium should be the toy store floor, which is where the airplane is. And it makes sense where they'd be like, did we do it? Are we out? And the answer is like, no, we're still in. Like, this is the last room to get out.
That works.
Which I think is good. So maybe we build backwards, because then I think like The Office, where Jason Bateman was doing all of his work, would be the Jason Bateman room.
Sure.
Tim, I don't think that's the kid's name, but I'm going to call him Tim. He was pretty much all over the place, so it could be pretty much any room we wanted for him.
It could be the room of rooms or whatever.
Sure.
If we wanted to. Let's see.
Let's start with the room for the kid with all the hats. Like what? Let's go with like two ideas for escape roomy type stuff to get through that room. Let's do two per. We're getting to about an hour. Let's maybe do two type like escape roomy traps per person. I think we can hand wave away anything else we want to do.
Yeah. I think the escape room thing with the hats is they have to choose the different hats like that tell the story of the kid or whatever. It's just like, oh yeah, this used to be, he wore so many hats when he was here, but what other hat, he eventually got out of hats, right? You know, he didn't do that for the rest of his life, right? But what other hats did he wear in his everyday life, right? You know, it's like, oh, he wore a hat of graduation, you know, like, you know, he wore a hat of he went into construction or something, so he wore a hard hat, or like, or maybe like an engineer or something like that, because and then he wore a hat of a father, which what is that, what kind of hat is that, right?
Just a baseball cap with a bottle opener on the brim. I've seen those before. Yeah. They're wild.
Or his kid was really into baseball or something, right? Like, and it is like, oh, it is the team hat of his kid's little league game, right? You know, that's the hat of a dad.
What if we do three characters? We haven't established a third one yet, but it can be literally anybody. And they go in the room and the door slams, and over the door is the Sphinx's riddle, the what creature walks on four legs in the morning, two legs in the afternoon, and three legs in the evening. And they have to like put on like a baby bonnet and some kind of just like a doll, like maybe a hard hat, like you said. And the last one's like some kind of like grandfatherly hat or something like that.
Okay.
And the idea of like, you know, life and like birth, life, death, and like all of the riddles over the door, they have to put on a series of hats that like...
Okay.
Remind her of him in some way.
Yeah. Because I think even though he was like an old man by the end of like his life or whatever, like she still maybe saw him as the kid, right? And I like that. I like that. That's really good.
And then what's like the puzzle that has to deal with like dealing with his grief or something? It's like the idea, the first one's about realizing he lived a full life. And like you said, like she's always seen him as a kid, but that's not the case. Like,
yeah.
He had a full life.
He had a full life.
What if the way she realizes that is the grandkid, and there's a thing we set up maybe in the montage or in the room of, or the house part of the door of rooms. She has a picture of her, Tim as an older man, Tim's son as an adult man, and then the adult son holding the baby, who's the grandson, and it shows Tim giving the kid like a little hat. And the idea is the kid, like the last hat that they have to put on to get out of that room is that hat. So she realizes, oh no, there's still part of him here or something like that. Like,
yeah. Yeah. We are his legacy.
Essentially. Like, you know, yeah. Like those who remain, etc.
I like the idea of like, okay, so maybe in that particular like design is that there are like these hooks that the hats go on, and then like you have to put the right hook on. They weigh all the same, right? But if you put like the wrong hat, it won't go down.
Call.
So if you put the right hat on, it lowers down and unlocks one of the big locks of the door or something like that. You know, like
that's really good. I like that a lot.
And it's like, oh, we're out of hooks. It's just like, oh, there's only this hat left. There's two of them, and like we put them on. Like, oh, we take them. We take what our memories of him and his legacy is us with us. That's cute.
All right. So with the next room for mutant, what do we want to go with here? Because the idea being Tim was a kid, so he led a full life. And then, you know, whatever, what's like the angle for mutant? Like, cause I feel like it has to be somewhat personal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to start kind of blue sky. Interrupt me at any point if you have an idea, but a lot of the thing with the movie was him sort of realizing like the stuffy job and suit and tie, like that he'd lost some kind of childhood wonder or belief. I mean, he ended up believing in magic at the end of the movie and that she was magic. Also, there was the scene in the hospital where he comes in and starts talking about how like, Mr. McGorham doesn't have insurance. And she's like, what the fuck are you doing? And Tim, after he was like, he doesn't know any other way to help. Like, I don't know. Does that spark any kind of ideas about an arc for Jason Bateman's character?
I think maybe like, maybe he's like the type of person who always just is trying to help, but he never took help himself. Right. You know,
ooh, like, 'cause that's a good, like look in the mirror for Mahoney.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just like, oh yeah. Like for so much of, because Jason Bateman was an adult by the time he learned the lesson or whatever, mm-hmm. like became like their like in-house accountant for their toy store.
I like that. I think because there's a great line we could use. My mom sometimes says this, where like my dad usually will do something and if he doesn't do it like correctly or whatever, he'll be like, well, I'm trying. And she goes, yes, you are. And I think that would be a great kind of McGorham-esque line for like, well, he was always trying. Yes, he was. Or something like that. Yes, would be a very fun kind of line. Said with love. Like, she always says it with love. I should clarify. I'm not throwing my mother under the bus 2 days before Mother's Day.
It's on the record. It's on the
record. Shit. Luckily, it's my edit, so you can't fuck me on this.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, like, a cool escape room thing mm-hmm. with that. Like, I like the whole, like, you know, when they were talking on the other sides of the glass or whatever, mm-hmm. like, I'm trying to think of like something with glass or like a look in the, like a literal look in the mirror or something.
I think,
and
tie that with the idea of never stop trying. Like they have to keep trying things maybe, mm-hmm. or like, I like what you're talking about. I think you got a good idea there with the window thing, or also like the whole idea of like, he believes in her. He figures out what the Congreve cube is about. It's like, you're the cube. Mm-hmm. You have to believe in yourself or something like that is maybe an angle.
Something with mirrors. Like, what if it's just like, oh, there's infinite opportunities, so they have to hold two mirrors up to each other to reveal an answer or something because they'll reflect each other back forever, right? And so maybe once they do that, a door opens or, like, it actually, like, or they reflect a light onto it and it, like, goes bananas.
Do
you have an idea?
Yeah. Okay. There's an open door that if they walk through it, it's the classic walk in the door and you immediately like come back out it into the room instead of leaving it. And the door they have to get out of is closed and locked. So they have to angle the mirrors. So it's the one, like one is leaning up against the closed door and they have to reflect the other so that the mirror leaning up against the door is reflecting the closed door or the open door.
And then they
can walk through it.
Yeah.
Which seems much more quote unquote whimsical. I have an idea of like,
it's like sometimes you got to do the thing that doesn't make any sense, mm-hmm. right? Like,
hey, DMs, you're welcome.
Hey,
you're welcome. Dungeon Masters, you're fucking welcome.
I like that.
But yeah, I think you put a much finer point on my bullshit. I think of like, sometimes it doesn't make sense. Like if you've been hurt this bad, why would you willingly throw yourself back into caring about people and relationships? Like why that doesn't make any sense, but yeah. Sometimes that's the way out, or that's how you can set yourself free, etc.
Yeah. And I think like the last thing, like,
mm-hmm. oh, sorry, one last thing. There is an active timer on this room specifically. I'm sure we can set up like an overall like 2 hours. This room's like, you have like 3 minutes to get out of this room. And the idea is like, at some point Natalie Portman's like, all right, well, we're done. Like we've got 10 seconds and we don't know what to do. And someone is like, no, like we never stop trying. You said he never stopped trying. We should never stop trying, etc. Is like,
he never gave up on anybody.
Yeah. He never, yeah. In general, or just never gave up in general. Is then how we can get to that part of the lesson.
Yeah.
And then
I don't know, like, mm-hmm. and what do we think is the big lesson she's learning? She's learning all these like little lessons.
I think they culminate in like,
is the big lesson, it's okay to change and it's okay to feel and it's okay to be sad, or like you don't have to be exactly like McGorham, right? You are the pieces that all of these people like.
I think like, it's like, for my mind, we're building a sort of not nuanced message, but like, the idea of, because I like what you were saying earlier about Mahoney like the lesson kind of being opening yourself up again, but also like it's okay to like openly grieve. Like you don't have to, like he always put on a happy face, and like maybe they learn that that wasn't always the case. Like it was just by this point in his life, he like maybe the idea is he opened his heart to everyone always. So even when he was like sad, there was just so many people he loved in the room that he like that it was made it okay. It wasn't that he never felt sadness. It was that he like Natalie Portman closed her heart off after Mutant died, and then especially after Tim died as an old man. And the idea isn't no, when those things happen, when you lose the people who are definitely important to you, you need to open your heart wider, let more people in.
I think when they talk to Bellini, where they discover something on that like note page or something, and or in the books, just like, and then Megorium cried, or Megorium like, went to his room and like was sorrowful or something. Just like, what is this like about him being sad? And Bellini's like, Megorium was sad all the time. He cried a lot. Like you never saw it, but Bellini saw it. And like, you know, like I like the idea that like, oh, nobody ever saw this like side of him, but just like, oh yeah, he was sad. He took a lot on himself, and like he grieved in his own way, and he took time for that. So like, while he's eating the bologna sandwich.
I like the idea of tying in with the King Lear thing you mentioned about, and then he died. It'd be this perfect sentence. And it just is Megorium wept, like Jesus wept from the Bible.
Sure.
Which I think is like a really simple sentence. Like, wait, what? Like, that's what they find. Like, that's the message. When they put all the pages with the holes in them together, whatever, the message that they reveal is Megorium wept or something like that.
Yeah. I like that.
It thematically ties in with the King Lear line. And then, yeah, I think Bellini being there and being like, yeah, that he was like, he was sad all the time. Like no one else was here because you all went home, but Bellini was here, and like the man lived for like 400 years. Of course he was sad. Like,
yeah, he wasn't always happy.
Right. But he just chose to take that sadness and open his heart wider to like try to not fill the sadness with more love. But it was the idea of like,
yeah,
He just chose to love more and more fiercely to like combat the sadness.
That's a very real feeling. Like too. Like I think I like the thing that you were talking about to get a little bit real. And even though I know we're like, it's a very real thing of just like, man, I'm sad, but I can't help from feeling happy. But with being around these people, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like it's something that I've experienced in my adult life, especially in my later 20s, of just like, this day sucked, but I'm around these great people right now. Yeah. You know, like, and like, not that I'm like staying happy for them or anything, but it's just like, I can't help but be happy even though I'm sad too. Right. And like that's a very real feeling.
And like, to a broader point, people tell jokes at funerals. Like,
yes,
not like that's not a thing. Like, you can feel sad and also find some joy in while being sad. Like, I think this is, I say, a great lesson to teach kids. We're not making this movie, but like,
yeah, I know.
Thematically, it tracks the idea of like, yeah, you can be sad and also like the most quote unquote whimsical as person in the world. Like,
yeah,
they're not mutually exclusive. And I also think that there's the heartbreak of like, it took her what, like 40, 50 years to learn that, like,
yeah,
or more. But
so one last thing is the code or whatever that like unlocks the doors and like lets them like do everything is like, what if it's like her crying or them crying together or like mourning and the tears of their face, like National Treasure and the lemon juice, reveal something on that fucking airplane or something, like another thing.
Oh,
or like,
I thought the airplane was what they put all of the pages of the journals
it's
on.
It's both things.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Or it could be on something else.
No, maybe it's a goblet
or like a Lego or
too
something.
Late.
I don't know.
Too late. Somehow this works because we're overlaying pages with holes in them. At some point they're going to like, or whatever, we overlay the pages with the holes in them so that there's like the message. And when she starts to cry on them, they start to like melt together. Like the idea of like the water sticking the pages together reveals some kind of secondary message.
That's good. Because there's always a hidden message between the lines. Anyway, I think that's the movie. Yeah. I don't know if we need anything else. They learned the lesson.
There should be a button, but I cannot fathom what it is, and my brain has stopped working.
That she leaves the store and like takes a vacation.
Actually, yeah,
or
like
something.
Actually, like maybe, yeah. I don't know. Maybe not a vacation, but like goes out into like across the street to a cafe or something. Like
yeah, yeah. Or maybe she goes with the grandson and like they go out and like share stories outside of the store or like. Mm. Something
she and the kids show up at his house and like she and the dad hug or whatever, like the yeah. His whole thing was like, you never leave this store, you're hiding from like grief, whatever, like they reconcile. Yeah. And that seems like a fine moment.
Yeah. Well, Bellini just has a party in the empty store. He's yeah. like, finally she's gone, and he's like walking around butt ass naked.
Turns out Bellini set up the whole thing not for her good, because he wanted to throw a fucking rager in Mr. Megorium's yeah, Wonder yeah. Emporium.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the movie is called Mr. Bellini's Raging...
You really painted yourself into a corner with this one.
Raging Linguini. It's a pasta yep. party, everybody. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. a pasta. It's a pasta party. And that he really wanted to get her out of the store so he could have his friends over for the most raunchous, ravenous pasta marinara, like, sort of dinner.
Fuckfest, like, yep.
Fuckfest, yeah.
What do we actually call it?
Miss Mahoney's...
I mean, do we need the Mr. Megorium SEO?
I don't know.
Because an idea of Mr. Megorium's, like, cathartic escape room doesn't have the wonder cathartic. To it, but... Man, if we've been thinking, if I'd known this was an angle, we should have done a crossover. So it could have been Mr. Megorium's Catharsis Dr. Parnassus crossover.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mr. Megorium's Here Comes the Boom Escape Room.
Mr. Megorium's Historic Memoriam.
God.
Mr. Megorium's Escape Room.
Valerium. Valerium.
Memoriam. What rhymes?
What if, I mean, okay, here's an idea. Mr. Megorium's Escape Roomorium.
Me, yeah, that's it. If I can't find a better word, yeah, yeah. Emporium. Sure. Mr. Megorium's Escape Room Aquarium.
Uh-huh.
I think it's Escape Room Orion.
Okay.
Like I cannot find anything better. It's like,
God. I love the senioritis that is like coming out as we hit the last like 10 episodes before Avengers of like, yeah, sure, Mr. Megorium's Escape Room Orion.
Yeah. Sure, whatever.
I mean, we had Boogie Zero Dawn.
I was seeing if there's any good rhyme with Mahoney. Sure. Miss Mahoney's Phony Baloney. Mrs. Maloney's Foamy Pony. Hmm. I think we're done.
Yeah, I think we're done. All right.
Mrs. Do we do Bony. It? Mrs. Mahoney's Bony Pony.
Do we do it?
I think we did it.
All right. Well, if we did it, that's credits on another episode of The Equalizers. Madison Jones, tell the people where they can find us.
People can find us on Podbean, Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and everywhere else podcasts are found by searching The Equalizers.
The Equalizers.
Including at that abandoned store that used to be a Toys R Us.
Mm-hmm.
You go into that place, you break in, you have to break in the back window, like take a rock or a brick or something, whatever you can find, break in to the abandoned Toys R Us that is still empty after all these years, and take out every third bag from each one, because the toys are still there. They just left the store.
Jesus Christ, Madison.
And put them together in a big line, and then point that line at the front door. And that front door, where the line of Legos points to, under that rug in front of the front door, is a safe. And if you turn that safe,
you can also find us style, on nope, Facebook
nope,
and
nope,
Twitter.
Nope. If you turn that safe style 5 times to the left, mm-hmm. 4 times to the right, mm-hmm. then 5 times to the left again, mm-hmm. you can open it, and inside is an MP3 player with this episode of The Equalizers on it, so you can listen to it again. On a Zune.
Unlike our usual model where we delete the episodes from the internet after you've listened to it one time.
Exactly.
Mission Impossible style.
So then after you do all of that, tell people about our show.
You can also get in contact with us on Facebook and Twitter at The Equalizers. Our Gmail is equalizers@gmail.com. We have an Instagram, which is the_equalizers. And as always, we spell that EQUELIZERS, like in sequel.
Like in sequel.
Special thanks to the Banana Boys for our theme song, Two Steps, strutting off their debut album, Technicolor Girl from Outer Space. You can find them on Facebook and Twitter by searching The Banana Boys. And as always, they spell that BOYES, like in oh yes.
Oh yes.
Their full album is available on all streaming services now. Madison, what are we doing next time? I mean, we are just rounding the corner here. The last two, I think, if my math is correct.
I believe you're right. It's weird. Google knows exactly what I want to open. I kind of like took the lead on this one. So like, or I think I was the one who's like, why don't we do this? So if you have anything that you feel that way about or anything, just let it, just say it.
Let's maybe collaborate if you want. I know what we're doing for 155. I'm going to lean on that one specifically.
And this is 153.
This is 54. This is 53. We're talking about 154.
What's like a, I always think we need to like swing way to a different direction after. Like,
yeah, we have recently, without meaning to, gotten like some wild swings, and I think we've just gotten like, well, we have to, we must,
we must. Something like super serious, like the Book of Eli, or
The Proposal,
King Kong.
You know what? Let's look. We got two episodes to Avengers, and. Let's just do something fun.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be serious or follow up. Let's just like pick a movie we think we're gonna have a good time.
6 hours later.
Like I said that, and we both just sat quietly for about 30 full seconds.
Notting Hill.
I've not seen Notting Hill.
It's a romantic comedy. And sure. It's one of the best romantic comedies in my opinion.
You know what? Let's do it. Let's do it. We'll wild swing into a rom com. Yeah. Okay. And then we'll wild swing out of that into the next one.
Cool.
So next time, tune in for Notting Hill 2. So, for The Equalizers.
I'm Befuddled Madison Jones.
I'm Unwritten Mike Miller.
First take your favorite leg, and then you kick it up to your chest. And then you pump your open palms, and then you really start breaking a sweat. That's all there is, that's really it, you barely even gotta move your butt. Come on, man, now follow my lead, or we'll do the two-step strut. Come on, dance with me.